Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
How many file cabinets did you say?
Well, I counted 58 file drawers.
Okay.
Just of cases, case histories and all. They had much more material on and with monographs and letters and correspondence and all, but the case histories were of interest. So I arranged with Mary to go out there, and she kindly put me up. And I initially copied or scanned, I should say, 275 what I thought were important files, and I wasn't sure at all if I was going to be able to go out there again. It depended on the good graces of Mary and her household. So I did that, and she suggested that I could come back again. And at that point, that was 2018, I decided to this time do a systematic scanning of their records. The technology was such that scanning was way better than any attempt to photocopy all of that. That's now old technology. The scanning would I think get a more accurate image of what these files were. So I started, in the 50s, I picked certain file drawers, mainly around UFO wave periods, and I would just begin with the first folder and work my way to the back of the drawers. And I would do that repeatedly for different drawers and the amount of time I had to scan them, and I was able to accomplish quite a bit, tens of thousands of pages of scans. If I work from about 9 in the morning till midnight, and maybe a little past midnight. It was grueling, but if I had only 2 weeks to work on them, I wanted to get as much done as possible, and I wasn't going to be able to do that by sitting around watching television. So that was a pretty tight effort to scan, and I went through that, and then I was able to go back again in 2019 and do more, weeks more worth of work and all, and I was able to pretty much do everything I wanted to do in the 50s and 60s and even the earlier times. They had historical files, which I had completely copied as well. So in 2019, I left off. I think I only had a little bit of 1965 to do, most of 1966 and part of 1967, and on that third trip, I was accompanied by Jan Aldrich, who's another UFO historian, who he went through the later 60s, and I was working my way up through the mid-60s, and we left off then, and the COVID hit, so we had to skip a year, but just a few weeks ago, we were out there and working on the files, where this time they had been transferred to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
From Chicago?
From Chicago, yeah, because they, I think they were having logistics moves, trying to place the files, I think, where they most would be useful. And with Albuquerque, a gentleman named Dave Mahler became a board member of CUFOS, and he opened his own collection to hosting the CUFOS files. Because he had created a succession plan in case anything happened to him, the files would eventually go to the University of New Mexico, where they had wonderful facilities for restoring records. I was given a tour of that when I first went out there, and it seemed like a really good way to approach this. And Dave is a very efficient, very skilled archivist now. He had his own collection to begin with, and he had a very nice building to put all these files in, and he's going to be expanding it eventually, it was looking very promising. Some funding's coming in, and he's able to improve the thing. But I was there for 2 weeks, beginning September 5th, and we did the same thing up in the morning, work on them, and quit by about midnight. So I think we pretty much have the 60s almost done. There's still some in 67 to do, but I wasn't feeling good when I went out there because the high altitude of Albuquerque, it's a mile up, and I have an air condition where it seems that the high altitude really bothered it. And I was somewhat incapacitated because of that for a bit, but I was able to catch up with what I wanted to do and surpass it. I finished 1966, which was really the biggest year that they had. They were like six file drawers full of those case records. And towards the end, I was able to get through that and begin a little bit of 67 before we had to quit again. So it's been going very well. We have scanned copies of a great deal of KUFOS and NICAP records now that survive outside of where the hard copy is.
Will there ever be any hope of scanning the records from APRO? This, ladies and gentlemen, is the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. That was the one headed by Jim and Cora Lorenzen. Last I heard, they were in a file cabinet in the garage, a bunch of file cabinets.
There's varying stories. I think the most credible one is that they're still in the hands of a couple named Brian Myers and Tina Schoat, and they were the people that picked up the APRO files originally and essentially just took them away from the research community and kept them wherever. I think they're in the area of Sedona, Arizona, and there were rumors, of course, that they were stored in a trailer. And the trailer had, I think the original file count was something like 18 file cabinets and numerous boxes. I've seen a photograph of their files from way back when the Lorenzens were still alive. So we have somewhat of an image of what was there. It's probably a considerable amount of volume. If they're ever surrendered for scanning and all, that would be great. But
you think that there's no value just sticking a bunch of file cabinets somewhere. At some point, you have to decide, what am I to do with this?
Right. If one does research and accumulate a lot of information through hard work and all, and you put those reports and all away and they're not shared or they're not copied, nothing's done with them, they may as well burn. They're useless to anyone else who might have an interest in consulting the information given. And that prompted this new effort, which is what I call preservation and dissemination. One, you want to make sure the files survive. The best way to do that is to scan them. And then dissemination, which is taking those scans and placing full copies of them in different places. So there's no real possibility that they will ever disappear. I mean, with hard copy, yeah, you could have a fire, an asteroid could hit the house and destroy everything, and it's gone if that's all there is. But this assures that the information survives in some fashion, and that's why I think it's probably the number one project that anyone could become involved with in this subject, because you're saving the history of it, which is very precarious.
Now, in terms of that, I'm going to ask you about what we can do with it once we've got it all scanned. I suppose there are lots and lots of ideas of what to do with a vast treasure trove of digital files, including UFO files from the 1950s, going into the point where the digital divide came together. Barry Greenwood, Gene Steinberg, Kurt Collins, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest-rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, so let's look at that, Barry Greenwood. You're scanning all this stuff. It then becomes searchable.
Yes. Well, to a point, I mean, there's a lot of scanned material. It's difficult to search. For example, handwritten accounts, many of the forms that were filled out years ago by witnesses were filled out in whatever they had available at hand. They weren't mostly typewritten. They were handwritten. Lots of folks chose to use light pencils to fill in their forms. Now, I noted a problem when I was scanning the such documents that when you have the scanners on a particular setting, they'll get most normal printed pages or handwritten pages, but when you use a light pencil, you can't see it. On the scans are set for something denser than that, and they don't pick up the light print. So when I was scanning the forms, I had to single them out and adjust them manually to make that print come out, and it did come out. But if someone had sent off these files to some company that did scanning work and all, I don't think they take the effort to adjust for oddities in the printed documents. So there was the potential that you would lose information even while you're scanning. That had to be done, to me, meticulously to make sure you didn't lose anything. I think we successfully did that. We always adjusted the exposures and also the documents would come out very readable.
That was something I'd wondered about, because that's a lot of work for some seemingly overqualified researchers who should be analyzing the material, and you're having to work in a sense like copy boys. But you're making the point that you're acting more as curators as you go and preserve the material.
Well, we had no choice but to get into the weeds with it. To do work like that, you have to do two things. You have to first prep the files, meaning those old records are full of staples, rusted paper clips, dirty tape, sometimes adhesives that was used instead of anything like staples or clips. We had to prepare those documents by getting rid of all of that first, which wasn't easy. You need a tetanus shot before you do work like that, because you stick your fingers with these old staples, you're asking for it. Once that's done, then you have a pile of folders, you pass it along to the scanner. Now, the device we used in Albuquerque was a very high-end scanner, which I think other organizations should consider investing in. It's not cheap, but it does much better work than a simple tabletop scanner. It ran pages through like a machine gun. And it was very good as far as scanning quality. We set everything to accommodate every possibility, and we did them as JPEGs rather than PDF files, which I think a lot of people like to do, simply because with the JPEG files that we created for each page, we could, if there were any problems or flaws in them, we could run them through a Photoshop program and correct those problems.
The only thing about JPEG, though, is it's a lossy medium. So it compresses the file, and as you save the file, you're compressing it and reducing the quality.
We had the file scanned at 300 dpi, which was an optimum thing for printed documents. I've seen scans done at lower than that, and they were horrible. These were coming in fine. When we make the adjustments, it doesn't reflect any loss of resolution, anything noticeable at all. How closely would one need to go in on a printed document to see, like an individual letter and all? If it's slightly fuzzy, slightly, I mean, it's not noticeable when you shrink the document back to normal size. We only use it to correct and smooth out problems and flaws. But otherwise, the documents reproduce fine. We've checked them. The only time we need to change the resolution is when it involves photographs. If you do black and white or color photographs at 300 dpi, you're going to get a Picasso rather than anything useful. So we had to kick it up to 600 dpi, and that seems to do the job. If we were able to kick it up higher than that, we would, but that was the limit at the time. And they're doing just fine. If any of those photos that we scanned are determined later to need analysis, the originals are still in the hard copy, and we can retrieve them very easily, and the originals can be made available for analysis. The scanned copies are simply for information to do research.
Now, that's the next step, of course. You get all this stuff copied, and you have a digital record. So where and when do the researchers have at it?
When we're able to get it straightened out and posted. This is a relatively new project, and it takes a long time because of the sheer volume of the records out there. This is a multi-year project for me, and we're still not done. We barely started the 1970s, and the records that exist for that. I think it would probably go a little better in terms of scanning because the documents during that period tend to be a little bit cleaner than the previous decades. Previous decades, like I said, you had tape and clippings stuck on pages and labels falling off. We had to fix all that. In the 70s and on, researchers had tended to do better in making up a particular case folder and all. So they used photocopies a lot. If there were originals there, you know, they tended to put them together with better quality. They didn't use sticky tape or punch staples through so much. So the preparation of those records, I think, would be easier, and the job would go a little bit quicker. I estimated that with what's remaining of the 1970s at CUFOS, we could probably get close to finishing that in probably two-week trips, which isn't that bad. But after that,
David Marlar already has some of the he's digitized some of the audio tapes when they're not NICAP files and has those on his site. So
right.
Things are beginning to be shared, but for the documents, some of these will be along, you know, sometime coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much to do. And this trip, I did close to 35,000 scans.
Whoa, that's a lot of work. Barry Greenwood joining us here. He's talking about archiving older UFO report records, try to put things together and create the climate for some research with Gene and with Kurt Turin.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, claimed that the U.S. still doesn't have an FDA-approved vaccine as he exposed what was really approved by the government agency on Fox News Primetime.
We do not have an FDA-approved vaccine being administered in the U.S. The FDA, you know, played a bait and switch. They approved the Comirnaty version of Pfizer drug. It's not available in the U.S. They even admit it. I sent them a letter 3 days later going, what are you doing? What they did is they extended the emergency use authorization for the Pfizer drug vaccine that's available in the U.S.
He called the mandate for all Americans to get vaccinated against the virus unconstitutional.
Former President Donald Trump asked a federal judge to force Twitter to reinstate his account in the civil lawsuit filed in Florida on Friday. Trump, along with several other plaintiffs, says that Twitter's ban of his account violated the First Amendment. This is USA Radio News. On Thursday's broadcast of CNN's Out Front, House Budget Committee Chairman John Yarmuth, Democrat of Kentucky, said that $3.5 trillion in spending under the reconciliation bill is pretty inconsequential when you consider all the benefits to the American people.
It's not a question of what we can afford. The federal government can afford anything that it feels it needs to do. And right now, that's what we ought to be focused on. So, that's kind of the position I took in the Budget Committee. That's the position I will take going forward.
China sent another 20 fighter jets into Taiwan's air defense identification zone on Saturday, just one day after the communist regime deployed 38 fighter jets over the island nation in the largest display of force to date. That incursion was followed by China's largest display of force this year, after the communist authority sent dozens of military jets that included multiple H-6 bombers with nuclear capabilities. This is USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
This is Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
This is obviously something that someone isn't giving you a large check to do. But looking at the UFO investigative picture, we've got people like you, not too many, going out there trying to get all these records together in a way that anyone who has some kind of digital access can look at those records and do something with them, one hopes. Do you think some real answers are found there, that we can possibly find some significant evidence about UFOs in all these things you guys are putting together?
It's hard to predict what will come out of that information. I certainly hope something useful will come out of it, but we won't know until it's thoroughly digested and studied in great detail. A lot of the people that created the early records are long gone now, so we've lost that perspective of what they knew, what was going on then. There may have been some lost detail and all that didn't get into the folders. We can only deal with what's in those folders now that those folks are gone. So it's hard to predict what results will come of it. I think we can probably improve the quality of some of the casework because over time, when we look at them, there are many new means to get additional information, such as a person reports a sighting in a particular place. We can now check the local press or other resources, a library, to tell if there's more information that could be added to the testimony and what people give. It's a long shot, obviously, given the amount of time that's passed. It's a cold case investigation of these reports, but cold case investigations are very popular with people now if you look at television.
Well, of course, they actually did a TV show once, Cold Case, where they'd look into old murder mysteries.
Right.
So, but the thing I was thinking here, though, also, it reminds me of something that Kevin D. Randall does from time to time called Chasing Footnotes, where he'll look up a specific sighting go back to all the original references, if they're available, of course, to try to get the source material and see where it's not just somebody copying somebody's book who then copied somebody else's book. And by the time you reach the third generation or fourth generation of books, you don't really have an accurate picture as to what really happened.
Yeah, I try enormously to track down the original sources in any instance. And we check footnotes. We check what's in those footnotes and determine if they drew from reliable sources or from, other UFO pulp literature. The best thing we can do is find where the story began, the initial source or revelation of information, and make sure that that's the primary bit of information backing up a case file. We find them, we put them in the case folder and say, here it is, this is where we trace the story back to. I do that with the bibliographic work, too, with remove from case files and all. I made an effort to create a bibliography of UFO articles that have been published worldwide since the beginning of the phenomenon, and I found myself having to correct the references. There were wrong years given, wrong page numbers, wrong titles that all had to be fixed. And I had to figure out if there is a flaw in a reference, what was the mistake, and can we retrieve the item that was intended to be the source for that reference that's inaccurate. So I've done that for years and years, too.
Well, at your site, I see where you have inventories, and I hear from mutual friends, you have an enormous collection of UFO literature, books, magazines, and even recordings, and videotapes. That must be massive.
Well, yeah, I mean, it takes, I guess, three rooms in the house here, and it's been the result of, 1964, it's been, 57 years since I started doing that, so it's bound to accumulate, it's in order. Much of it's cataloged, which is what I really wanted to do. I wanted to let people know that we not only have the references, but we also have a copy of the references. You can have a reference that alludes to something. You may not have it. I have it so that you can get that original source. I pull them out of the libraries and log them in, and there they are. So that accumulates. I think there's about 17 file crates of articles. There's something over 300 volumes of news clippings, and I'm talking about, 2-3-inch binders and up, and that's a lot of information, and it's gotten so out of control that I've had to resort to digital filing of news clippings now, and I store them on the hard drive so that when I need to send them out, if someone is looking for information, I can just press a few buttons and off they go. We didn't have that technology before, so I had to put them into hard copy binders.
Oh, wow. Have you reached any point here where you've been able to trace back some cases to original references and maybe at least discard them?
And to what now? To what was the last part?
Go back to the original reference and find, well, maybe there wasn't much to it, so we can set this one aside.
Oh,
have you encountered much of that?
Some. I think the subsequent information in casework, you can find a factor. Sometimes a news clipping will tell you that there was a missile launch days after the original report was published, and we may only have that initial report without the follow-on. And when we find the follow-on, that can explain it. And we can just put that away as an identified incident. I don't discard them, though. That's the thing that some people do that I won't do, because I find that to be very valuable to learn in doing investigations that you have to cover maybe more than what you have in your hands to tell if something is explainable or not. I look for weeks sometimes after the reports are published and see if there's a follow-on or a letter to the editor where someone might have a key bit of information about what happened. So I keep all of that available. I discard nothing.
Well, earlier in the show, you were talking about Roswell, for example, where what happened, what really happened, has been embellished over the years, especially since so much stuff came out 30 years after the event, all these stories. Is there any source where someone who wants to know about Roswell can just look at it and say, this is a pretty good idea of what happened?
Well, there's a lot of wide opinion on it. If I'm going to suggest something, it's going to be away from the bodies and exotic debris idea, because I felt that wasn't well grounded. So I would be more inclined to point to a source that would stick by the original reporting on it and not get into the wilderness of what happened 30 years later, which can be deceptive. There's some good information there, but I just can't buy that it was a crash of a spaceship or interdimensional ship or whatever you want to call it.
Well, certainly, if you go back to the original reference, a flying disc crashed. No, it was nothing more than a balloon. Here's the picture. Mm-hmm. Here's Marcel with his balloon, and that's the end of the story. So if we're going to go back to the original source, that's the original source material.
Yeah.
We've got more to come with Barry Greenwood. One more segment, and then we're going to rope him in for our After the Paracast premium show. With Gene and with Kurt, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
We know that the 1% globalist elites have hijacked and subverted the U.S. economy, culture, and government. The battle to take America back begins with Scott McKay, the Patriot Street Fighter, and his Advancing the Fork in Line tour. Now here's Scott.
Hi, this is Scott McKay, better known as Patriot Street Fighter, the high-octane, full-throttle truth hammer, and I'm bringing the Advancing the Fork in Line tour to a city near you. I and a host of other speakers will be on stage with an arsenal of issues from health rights, human rights, and the freedom given to us by the founding fathers who drafted the Constitution for the United States of America. This is a ticketed event, and you can get tickets at PatriotStreetFighter.com. I'm looking forward to personally seeing many of you there.
The Patriot Street Fighter Advancing the Fork in Line tour tickets can be purchased at PatriotStreetFighter.com. For tour dates and information, or to purchase your tickets, go to PatriotStreetFighter.com. That's PatriotStreetFighter.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from AmeriCare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. AmeriCare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system.
Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase Nano Colloidal Silver now at ImmuneSupportNow.com. That's ImmuneSupportNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer and communicate information and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So that's where I was really going back to with Roswell, Barry Greenwood, which is, if we're going to look at the original version, version is those two stories.
Unfortunately, we don't have books that were published on the Roswell incident between 1947 and 1979 or 80. Nothing was published about it, so that you have a complete lack of detailed reporting into that story. You're forced to deal with the original incident, but you recognize when you look at that and then you compare it to information years later that there's a vast gulf between what they said then and now. There's tons of books on Roswell now.
There were some people that believed that at one point that if Roswell collapsed, all of ufology collapsed. And then it's so ridiculous because there's so many other good cases, not necessarily of finding bodies. But so how do you feel about that? What are some other cases that if you were interested in Roswell and you're disappointed, what else can you dig your teeth into?
Oh, there are many, many reports. I mean, you know, when you speak of Roswell, that happened on the tail end of the 1947 UFO wave. There was a lot going on before that news story hit on July 8th. That was the wave. It wasn't Roswell. Roswell didn't dominate that wave. That was just like the little red light at the end of, you know, of a procession of UFOs as in Close Encounters. There was much more to that time frame. And if I were to pick cases, I mean, everybody has their own list of top 10 they think are compelling incidents. My usual favorite is an incident that happened in Loveland, Texas in November 1957, where there were multiple sightings of a huge egg-shaped object that had knocked out the ignition systems of vehicles all over the Loveland area at the time. It had been prominently reported in the news, and at one point, Life magazine, which was one of the top publications of its day, had gone out and taken photographs and had done a story. Unfortunately, for some reason, they never published it, but if you look in the Life magazine photo archives, which I think it might be under Google Books. I'm not sure. I've consulted it before, but there are a large assortment of photographs that they had taken there, along with many other incidents that they had reported on in the past. Loveland is one of my favorites because with all of those seeming electromagnetic interference incidents going on and the large amount of witness reporting, the Air Force chose to explain it as possible manifestation of ball lightning. And I thought that was hilarious because what they were doing was essentially explaining an unexplained phenomenon with another unexplained phenomenon, because ball lightning still hasn't been totally fleshed out for the scientific community. There's still doubts about it, oddly enough, even though it seems that it's pretty solid.
Well, with that case, there seems to be some things that, you know, with the number of witnesses, the physical effects, something really seems to have happened, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it was an alien spaceship.
Right, but that's fine with me. I regard any unexplained phenomenon as part of it. It doesn't have to involve aliens.
Well, that's the point here, to find out what they are, not to prove someone's pet theory. But unfortunately, right. I kind of think far too many people want to prove the pet theory.
Yeah, that's probably a majority of the people in the subject, unfortunately.
I don't want to say MUFON, but...
Okay, I'll say it.
Had a number of years' experience with MUFON.
Right. I joined it in 1977, and it seemed to be on a good direction. That was a time when it was clear that the NICAP organization was beginning to fail after sort of a bloodless coup in the late 60s where Donald Kehoe was thrown out. Or he was bumped upstairs, but his power was eventually essentially neutered. And along with Gordon Lohr, who was the assistant director, he was let go outright. So from that point on, the membership of NICAP became very dissatisfied with the change. They had been with Kehoe for years, and he was gone, so they felt like they were in a void. And I do recall many investigators in the early 70s bailing out of NICAP and going off with something called the Midwest UFO Network, which eventually became MUFON. And it was a growing organization, and it grew quite a bit in the 70s and became, you know, pretty dominant during that time frame. But I joined in 77 and, you know, it participated in investigations and then local activities with the group here in Massachusetts. But over time, it became evident that their direction was changing as well, and they became more interested in proving extraterrestrials than doing objective research into sighting reports. There were a number of things that had come up in the 80s that I was bothered by. One was their seeming endorsement of MJ-12, which is, to me, a clear-cut hoax. And then the rise of Gulf Breeze in 1987, which I think was clearly a hoax as well, but they were pretty thoroughly endorsing it as genuine.
You know what surprised me about Gulf Breeze? And I want to pick up on some of these things and these conclusions in our After the Paracast podcast, Barry. But Bruce McAbee bought into Gulf Breeze. That surprised me.
It's not surprising, maybe, when you consider that he was paid a hefty sum to add a section in Ed Walter's book endorsing the story. I understand that he was able to do a down payment on a house with the amount of money he received. I wasn't the only one that was suspicious of that. There were a large number of other members and investigators who thought that was kind of creepy. But it happened, and you know, it's one of the number of things that contributed to me eventually resigning, because I just felt they weren't being objective anymore. It's an advocacy group.
Well, and now it's a way of getting membership money. Do you know there is now a VIP membership with the fee of $299 a year?
Yeah.
It starts around 50 or so. And there's one in the $100 plus range. And then at $299. And $299, you get all these things they throw in there. We're going to get the throw pillow. And you're going to get the T-shirt, I guess. I lost track of this stuff, folks, because we sell T-shirts, too. But we don't expect you to spend $299 a year with us. We offer a lifetime subscription to the Paracast Plus. But again, that's a number of years. It's not just 1 year. In any case, we're going to end this episode of the Paracast, but then we are going to have Barry back with After the Paracast, if you're a subscriber. So, Barry, tell our listeners if they want to know more of what you do. You do have a site.
Yes, the Greenwood UFO Archive. It's essentially a catalog of the things that I've compiled over the years. It's not absolutely thorough. I'd have to work a lot more on books and monographs and all, but it contains a lot of, I think, good references to how to find articles and other literature on the subject that is probably difficult to locate normally.
You can find us on Twitter if you look for the Paracast. Find us on Facebook and explain why our URL can't be posted on Facebook, but we have two sections there. Really strange. We have branded merchandise, speaking of the logos and stuff. If you want to buy a T-shirt or a throw pillow, go to theparacast.shop, theparacast.shop. We also offer the Paracast Plus, where we give you the After the Paracast podcast, plus a version of this show free of all those network ads, free of the network ads, and the After the Paracast podcast, where Barry Greenwood will be back. You can subscribe by visiting theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. The coupon code UFO20 gets you a 20% discount on the lifetime subscription, which is still cheaper than the one-year VIP subscription from MUFON. How about that? Paracast.plus. Barry, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the time.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203, 877-878-4203.